Mr. Damon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may approach, but let's give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel, I'm Greg Damon. I represent the appellant, Stephen Cruzy. This case is an appeal from county court denial of a motion to suppress. The motion was based upon the insufficiency of an affidavit that was used to obtain a search warrant for Mr. Cruzy's blood. Of course, after Birchfield versus North Dakota, that's required in cases of this type. I'm going to kind of start from the end, a little bit backwards here. Typically, when you read the case law and these sorts of issues, the last thing in the opinion is a summary or an analysis of the good faith exception. And I think it's important that I bring that up at the beginning and make sure the court understands the procedural history of the case. The motion was filed, the hearing was scheduled. At the hearing, the only evidence was the affidavit. That was the sole piece of evidence. It was offered as an exhibit. No argument was made at that time by the state as to the good faith exception. Nothing had been filed raising that issue. It was just the four corners of the affidavit. And I think that was even stated at the hearing that this...
To preserve the good faith argument, when does the state have to bring that up? Or does the state have to bring it up?
I think the state needs to bring it up. State versus Tompkins says that it's the state's burden to bring it up, and it's waived if they don't. I believe it needs to be brought up at the suppression hearing.
Were briefs submitted in this case at that point?
Yes, and it wasn't argued in the brief, and that's why...
Are those briefs part of our record here today?
No. I think that would be something that would be the state's burden to include in the record that they argued it. It's not my burden.
Did the state raise the good faith exception in the district court?
After I had submitted my brief and their response brief, they did, and so I had no opportunity even to respond to that. But the trial court opinion doesn't even address the good faith exception, obviously, because it wasn't raised. No one argued it. So it wasn't in the county court's opinion. It was in the district court's opinion. I believe that's actually it really wasn't the only basis that the district court used to affirm the county court.
Counsel, you seem to be reading Tompkins to stand for the proposition that the state must raise the good faith exception argument at the trial court level. That's not what Tompkins says, is it?
Well, I think what Tompkins says is that it's the state's obligation. It basically says you know, it can't be raised for the first time on appeal.
Well, doesn't it say that the court, the appellate court, will not sua sponte raise the matter? Isn't it silent on the issue about whether the state has to raise it on appeal?
Well, I don't believe it is. Directly addresses that. And then there's State versus Holquin, which is a court of appeals case after Tompkins, where they address that. And at Holquin, it says the state must raise the issue at the suppression hearing. I mean, those exact
words. But that's
words.
Based on Tompkins.
Based on Tompkins, Holquin says state's got to raise it. Actually, if the state is going to try to bring in evidence outside the four corners of the affidavit, Holquin says that has to be done at the suppression hearing. So I think it's clear that the state waived the issue. And and really, the reasoning given in Tompkins is it would apply here, because the reasoning given was that it's not fair to the defendant to not raise the issue at the trial court level, because those factual determinations and arguments as to good faith ought to be able to be brought up and defended.
Isn't the good faith argument in this context based on the content of the affidavit and the content of the search warrant?
It's primarily, as I interpret the state's brief in this court, it's primarily based upon evidence in stipulation that was provided for purposes of basically addressing the case without a trial and preserving the appellate record. There was a stipulation that was offered that had police reports in it. I think they do argue the general Leon 4 points, good faith exception, but I mean, on an affidavit of this type, I think even if you would find that the state didn't waive it, which I totally disagree with, but if you found that they didn't, the exception still doesn't come into play. I mean, this affidavit is so deficient. The lower courts recognize that, although they just, I think the district court and the county court relied too much upon the case law that says that you can look at the totality of the circumstances in a common sense kind of way. Well, that's true, but you still have to have facts upon which
What is missing, in your opinion, in the affidavit?
Well, first of all, the affidavit is...
What's the strongest argument you have for what's missing?
I think the two strongest arguments are, number one, the affidavit doesn't say that Mr. Cruzy was driving the vehicle. I think that's important. And it doesn't present any real facts. It's just innuendo and assumption that he was driving. But it doesn't say. That's a pretty simple thing to put into an affidavit of this type. And, you know, normally it would say vehicle was driven by the defendant and pulled over and he was behind the wheel and I smelled an odor of alcohol and then continue from there. But this one just kind of jumps to the factual statement that I went to investigate an injury vehicle accident and encountered Cruzy.
Can the court draw any inferences?
Oh, some. I think.
What's the limit?
Well, the limit, obviously, in this case, I think that whole notion of common sense and totality of the circumstances is just stretched as beyond the limit in this case, because I think just to have basically one paragraph of this type that says that I appeared on the scene and there was this person and I smelled alcohol and I had been called there because there was an injury vehicle accident, there needs to be more than that. And beyond the fact that it didn't say that he was driving the vehicle, it doesn't have any information to indicate he was impaired. And he's investigating, apparently, a DUI. And so there were no
fields. So that's your second strongest argument?
Yeah, I think the second strongest argument is there has to be something to indicate that he was under the influence.
And doesn't it say that he was observed to be incoherent and unable to submit to...
Well, if you just take that first part, that, you know, if that's all there was, but that was explained. It goes on to say, since he was being treated by medical personnel and was being taken from the scene by the rescue squad.
What about the odor of alcohol on his breath that was observed by both officers and the rescue personnel?
Well, it's not illegal to have odor of alcohol.
Isn't that evidence of impairment?
It's evidence that would allow an officer to follow up and determine if there's probable cause for impairment. Because
so is evidence of an odor of alcohol in your breath and a motor vehicle accident and observed incoherence, are those things together enough?
Well, observed incoherent because he'd been injured in an accident and was being taken away. That's what the officer says, since he was being treated by rescue personnel.
It said it couldn't do the field sobriety test because of that. It didn't say the incoherence was because of the treatment.
Well, it says that he couldn't do the field sobriety test because he was being treated by medical personnel. If it's an injury accident and he's being treated by medical personnel, the incoherence clearly could have been resulted as a result of something related to the injury in the accident. He didn't say that it was because of alcohol.
It could have been, but we're just looking for probable cause.
Right? It could have been, but there needs to be more than that. This is not all that much different than if you have a case where somebody's driving down the street, they make an improper lane change, the officer pulls them over and smells an odor of alcohol. At that point, the officer cannot arrest the person and bring them in and seek a warrant and draw their blood. There has to be a follow-up to determine whether they're actually impaired. And if you don't have that evidence, the case ends right there. The person gets their warning for improper lane change, even though there's alcohol in their breath, and they go home. And so, to me, this affidavit, I've detailed 8 or 10 other shortcomings, things that you would typically expect to see in an affidavit of this type that's not there. So I see I'm out of time unless there are any questions.
When was your client arrested?
At the hospital. And you're talking time-wise after?
After the blood draw?
Yes.
So the warrant had already been obtained?
Yes. I believe so. I think it says 7:03 p.m. on the warrant, and I think it was it was after that he was arrested.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Duffy. Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Appellant argues the district court erred in affirming the county court's decision that the affidavit supporting the search warrant at issue established probable cause. The state believes that both the district and county court correctly determined the affidavit was sufficient to establish probable cause. In the alternate, the state believes the good faith exception applies, and we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. I intend to begin by addressing the probable cause affidavit itself, and then move into the good faith exception pending direction from this court. Probable cause sufficient to justify the issuance of a warrant means a fair probability that contraband or evidence of a crime will be found. And the question is whether, under the totality of the circumstances illustrated by the affidavit, the issuing magistrate had a substantial basis for finding that the affidavit established probable cause. Here, when read as a whole, the totality of the circumstances established through a common sense reading of the affidavit shows that Officer Palmer was dispatched to the area of 8th and Jackson Street in Seward due to an injury vehicle accident, that law enforcement and emergency responders who had contact with the appellant noted an odor of alcohol about both his person and in a vehicle.
Mr. Damon says there is nothing in the affidavit whatsoever that indicates this gentleman was driving. How do you respond to that?
The affidavit does not expressly state appellant was the driver. I think that is implied, and it's part of this common sense reading, which is, I think, what both on the county court and the district court noted, that as a whole, the affidavit states that this odor was about him and his vehicle, and then the officer gave some information about his training experience and about how the body metabolizes alcohol, and that blood can be tested to determine alcohol, that he believed that the appellant was involved in an injury motor vehicle accident.
So in effect, counsel, you would agree that whether or not he was driving is a matter of inference, not a matter of statement of fact in the affidavit.
That's correct, Your Honor. The affidavit does not state that the appellant, does not specifically say appellant was the driver.
So why isn't it the inference that he was a passenger in the vehicle equally strong as one that he was a driver?
Well, I think later in the affidavit, the officer, the officer says that he believed that, based on all these facts, he stated that appellant was involved in a motor vehicle injury accident, and that he was operating motor vehicle under the influence of alcohol, and that his blood would establish this. I think that's kind of the analysis that the district court went through, was that obviously...
But nothing definitive, such as there were no other persons.
That's correct, Your Honor. There is nothing stated that I recall in the affidavit regarding other passengers or other vehicles involved. It is inferred by what the affidavit states. But the state believes that these are common sense inferences, and that the totality of the circumstances established by this affidavit was sufficient.
So you're looking at the language that says, wherefore your client believes that Stephen C. Cruzy has committed the crime of driving under the influence.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think that's also what the district court looked to. Further, just the other statements about, I think read as a whole, it's implied. It is not expressly stated, but it is implied that he was the driver of one of the vehicle.
What have we said about statements of belief in affidavits?
Well, statements of beliefs on its own are not going to be sufficient. But I think that here we don't have an officer simply stating, the affidavit doesn't just say, I'm officer so-and-so. I believe that someone committed this crime. I would like a warrant to get evidence. All of the other facts that went into this, I think, lead to this conclusion. So I think that, yes, while the officer stated, I believe this, I think that when read in context, I think that it can be inferred that it's based on all of these facts given. So again, the state's position is that this affidavit was sufficient to establish probable cause. In the alternate, should this court disagree, the state believes that the good faith exception applies. I'll briefly, this court in Tompkins, I believe that this court's kind of concern in Tompkins with requiring the state to raise at some point the good faith exception was to give an appellant or a defendant the ability to respond to that.
So where did the state raise it in this case?
Well, certainly we are raising it now. Again, I believe that at the district court level, I don't recall whether it was ever raised in the arguments. I do note that in the district court's order, it stated that briefs were permitted to be submitted to the court. However, those briefs are not in the record before this court.
If you raise it at this level, does the defendant have the opportunity?
Yes, Your Honor, I think so. I think that had the state simply raised it in its brief at this point in time, appellant could have filed a reply brief or here at argument today could have addressed on why he believed that the good faith exception did not apply. And this court in Nielsen...
What if the defendant wanted to put some evidence in a record?
Well, I think that this court has noted in State v. Nielsen that in 2018 that Tompkins did not specifically state whether raising the good faith exception at the appellate level, it didn't answer that specific question, but this court then looked to some of the language in Tompkins and noted that that language would suggest that in order for an appellate court to consider the good faith exception, the state can raise it at either the trial court or on appeal. And so on appeal, an appellant is not able to introduce new evidence to the court.
That's right. Is that fair to the defendant?
Well, Your Honor, I think, again...
Can we remand it to the trial court and say, pick up the issue of good faith?
Well, I suppose that would, in essence, then be creating a rule that the state cannot raise it at... Well, I guess this court would be saying then that an appellant could raise it, but that...
What evidence would there be when you're talking about a search warrant with an affidavit and a warrant? What other evidence would there be about good faith?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, for good faith to apply, information outside the four corners of the affidavit can be introduced. And here, as the state noted in brief, that at the stipulated bench trial, some supplemental police reports were introduced, in which the same officer who wrote the affidavit noted that when he arrived on the scene, he observed two vehicles severely damaged, that he observed the appellant slumped over in the driver's seat of one of those vehicles, and that another officer who had contact with the appellant told the...
But the good faith here is not whether the officer had reason to apply for a warrant, it's whether or not the officer could rely on the warrant. And doesn't that depend solely on what's in the affidavit and the warrant itself?
Well, and I may be mistaken, but I believe that this court has previously said that other information that is known to the officer at the time he applies outside the four corners of the affidavit can be looked at to determine whether that reliance on the warrant was appropriate or not. And if I am mistaken, then I suppose that there would be no need for any further evidence. But again, the state believes that the...
So, yeah, I guess if the other evidence was somebody else was driving, that would be evidence that the defendant might want to bring up.
Correct, Your Honor. I suppose I would assume that would be something that would be brought up at the suppression hearing when the appellant is trying to say that this warrant was invalid. Appellant's arguments aren't that information was misleading or was faulty. It's simply just, well, it doesn't have these certain things.
At the suppression hearing, what's on the table is not whether or not good faith is properly taken. It's whether or not there's probable cause issue of what?
Correct, Your Honor.
So you wouldn't necessarily know that would be issue to which response should be imagined.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think here, at the county court level, the suppression hearing was simply based on the affidavit. That was the only evidence.
At the appeal level, if the defendant's used up all of his or her brief allocation, mm-hmm. How would that respond to the state's raising good faith? For the
I think they could request permission from this court to either, have additional pages for a reply brief. Certainly at oral argument, it could be raised. And I think just following along with this court's statements in Tompkins and in Nielsen, that the purpose is to allow appellants, at least as I read Tompkins, this court's concern, and obviously this court is free to tell me I'm incorrect with what it was concerned
but it's
with.
It's kind of a basic thing that when you're in court, you ought to know what things are being said about you.
And I think that in Nielsen, this court looked to some of that language in Tompkins and said that it would seem to suggest that it would be okay for the state to raise it at the first time on appeal. And I think that's because the appellant would have an opportunity to file a reply brief or to come before this court or oral argument to make some responses.
So we don't have the brief argument from either the county court or the district court in our record. But today, Mr. Dahman told us that the state raised the good faith argument in its briefing to the district court. Do you have any reason to dispute that?
I do not, Your Honor. I have not seen the briefs. Obviously, the district court wrote about good faith in its order. And I think based on this court's language in Tompkins and as discussed in Nielsen, that would be sufficient. An appellant has certainly had the opportunity to then address whether good faith should apply, which
on further appeal would be on notice that good faith is now in the mix.
Correct.
Is that your position?
Correct, Your Honor. I think based on what this court has said previously, I think it seems to me that's kind of the court's concern with an appellate court raising it sua sponte, is that a party would not have an opportunity to respond. I am well over time.
Is there anything in the record that shows whether it was raised or wasn't raised at the trial court level?
Your Honor, I don't. At the county court hearing, no, the hearing on the motion to suppress was very brief. It was simply just a submittal of the search warrant into evidence. I don't know if briefs were submitted at the trial court level, and if so, what was contained in them. Based on appellant's statements, I would assume that it was not raised at the trial court level. It was at the district court acting as an intermediate appellate court.
But the record's silent.
Correct, Your Honor. We request that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day, then, is State versus Simmer.